Welcome to the Chris Raby Show on Scoops at DannyMac.com. It is the Friday, February 19th, 2021 edition of the program. We're going to talk with my guy, Casey Halpern, from Sunday Night Football, NBC Sports. He's a researcher for Sunday Night Football, also part of Fox Bets. He's in New York City. We're going to check in with Casey for the Pulse of New York. What's going on as we are about a month away from hopefully one of the best times in sports with the NCAA tournament, with the Masters, with baseball getting going, NBA, NHL playoff pushes in full swing. We'll head to New York in a moment and chat with our guy, Casey Halpern. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast Scoops with Danny Mac wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review, screenshot, and send to me. You can tweet me at CHRABE. Also, head to ScoopsWithDannyMac.com for all the latest from the entire Scoops team. All right, let's head to New York and say hello to Casey Halpern on Twitter at Casey Halp. He is a researcher on Sunday Night Football, NBC Sports, also part of Fox Bets. And Casey, we are in kind of the odd spot where we're in between football ending. We've got NHL, NBA, college basketball. We are also still in the midst of the pandemic. Parts of the country are under snow. This is kind of this is when you put your head down, you get to the tough areas, you kind of have to grind as a sports fan, Casey Halpern.
You know what? We've got a lot of good stuff on the horizon. We've got the NFL offseason kicked up into high gear right now. We just had the Carson Wentz trade go down yesterday. We're officially under 1 month away from March Madness, something we were deprived of last year. We've got the NBA All-Star game coming up in about 2 weeks now. So things are about to pick up a little bit. We got to get through this month of February. And as you said, the entire nation is covered in snow except for three states, which I saw this morning and I kind of didn't believe. But yeah.
How about last year when it came to March Madness? That was like the first couple of weeks of this kind of beginning. And the reactions, the incredulousness when people thought about potentially having the tournament with no fans. If we knew then what we know now, things were going to change a lot more. People were just mystified at the thought of maybe having the tournament with no fans.
I mean, it's crazy to think about, right? Like, I actually genuinely feel like that was yesterday. Like, it feels like nothing has happened since, but we are a year later currently. And just to think about like the concept of having no fans, and people were like perplexed, like, what do you mean you can't have fans? Like, and that's finally become like the new normal now. Like, we've adjusted to having no fans. And I think as sports fans, obviously having no fans is better than having nothing. So I'm just grateful that sports are going on and we're trying to adjust to this new norm and making do with what we can, because that's quite frankly all we could do at this moment. Right. We got to play the hand we're dealt. So I think, look, all the leagues are doing as best as they can. It's a tricky situation, but I'm hopeful that it works out and we really do see a full NCAA tournament.
What's it like in New York City right now, man?
Right now, it's interesting, right? Because it's cold, it's snowy. So a lot of stuff is, you feel like it's empty, right? You feel like it's the beginning of the pandemic again. But when it's a beautiful day out, you feel like it's New York City again. So it's just like, it depends on the day, but it feels like the city is coming back day by day. Feels like things are on the come up again. Whereas opposed to, I've been in New York City since the day the pandemic started, right? Like March 7th, I've been here since. I have never left. The first 2 to 3 months were so eerie, Chris. Like, it was like depressing. Every 10 minutes or so, you would hear sirens, like from an ambulance. You would go out onto the street and it was literally a ghost town. Like, you could drive down Madison Avenue and you could literally see down the whole entire street. And I'm not sure if you've ever been to the city or not, but that's just something you can't see. Like even now, like there was no one here, it felt like, and just things are progressively getting better. We just reopened indoor dining to a 25% capacity. So I'm hopeful with the spring coming around, the nice weather, it will start to feel like New York City again. But there's been days where it's definitely felt like, all right, this is the vibrant New York City that never sleeps. But obviously with the snow and the freezing cold weather we've been handed in the past month or so, it hasn't been as sexy as people think New York City is.
Just kind of business as usual for the Knicks, right?
Exactly. Business as usual. I mean, it's their best team in what, like 5 years now? I'm actually not a Knicks fan, surprisingly. So growing up, my dad had New York Knicks season tickets for like 25 years. And we got rid of them in 2002. And it's actually a funny story why we did. So when I was younger, he would take me to a bunch of games and I would never root for the Knicks. I don't know why. I just like started to not like them. So every game I would try and find an away jersey of the team they were playing and wear that jersey. And I was just...
Oh, I bet you had some beauties.
Oh, I had great ones. Just look, thinking about it right now, amazing jersey collection I had when I was younger. Am I allowed to curse on here, by the way?
Sure.
So I was just that little shithead kid in the stands wearing the opposing team's jersey. And I'll never forget this. When I think I was 6.5 years old, the Knicks were playing the Raptors in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. And it was game one at the Garden. And Vince Carter went off on the Raptors for like 27 points or something like that. And they just crushed the Knicks, right? So I turned to my dad and I was like, Dad, do we really have to watch this shit anymore? Like, why do we keep coming to this? And he was like, you know, that's a great point. I don't know why I waste my money. And he just gave up his tickets after that.
Wow. So yeah. You were the one that did it.
Yeah, I guess I was the one that got him out early, at least, because otherwise he'd probably still be sitting in section, I think, 113, 115, and cheering on a disappointing organization that's just not well run. But hey, it seems like they're on the right track now, it seems like. But, you know, I don't know how long that will last.
Vince Carter's a great one, and he's a guy who kind of epitomizes, I think, like I grew up, you know, in Chicago and a huge Michael Jordan fan. But then, you know, I was in high school right after Jordan left the second time when the Bulls were terrible. And, you know, you start paying attention to maybe the rest of the league or whatever. And Vince Carter was that guy who was just always around until like last year when he actually retired. One of the more remarkable complete bodies of work, I think. And maybe if it's possible to be underrated, if you're Vince Carter, one of the more underrated athletes of this generation, I think, in any sport.
I completely agree. And I think a reason why he's often forgotten, like when people talk about great players in the game, is think about like how long he extended his career, right? As just that savvy veteran that would come off the bench, like that three-point marksman, like his career, like he came into the league as this like uber athletic, like swingman, and who put up 25, 24 points a game. And as soon as he got to like this past decade, he wanted to stay in the NBA and he became this 3-point marksman where he would shoot like 35% from three and like take 5-6 threes a game. And I think the fact that he elongated his career and played for so many different organizations causes people to forget how good and how special of a talent he was in the early 2000s and mid 2000s with the Raptors and Nets. And I think that's why he's so underrated. Because if you look at like his stats, he went from scoring 25 points a game for almost a decade to the past decade of scoring like 10 points a game off the bench.
But kind of evolving as the NBA evolved, you know?
Exactly. He spanned, what, 3 decades in the NBA? Like, that is just as impressive of a feat as possible. Actually, 4, because he played in 2020.
Yeah. So it's remarkable. And, like, you think about him and you look up and he's 43. He's not even old.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
And now he's just an all-star in the media game.
Oh,
he's coming for our spots.
So good, man. Like, I was talking to someone yesterday on the show about that and about how, you know, back in the day we would joke about the guys that had to have jobs in the off season in whatever sport. But not only is that not an issue anymore. You've got these guys that are so good that can slide into broadcasting and commentary. And you work with a number of them on Sunday Night Football. Like, you know, in St. Louis, Adam Wainwright was, you know, doing a game for Fox last year during the postseason, or for Turner last year during the postseason, and he was unbelievable. I think that social media and just the accessibility of these guys has led to a lot of them being willing to embrace taking on being in the public eye, or being in broadcasting, being on that side of things, even if they're still, you know, playing. We're seeing some of that in the postseason. We're seeing networks use guys in more creative ways. I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. Could not agree with you more. And I think a large reason why that is because athletes nowadays, they grew up in the digital age, right? They've always had a phone around them. They've always had a phone in their face. Like, they've always been on camera, and it's kind of prepared them for the spotlight in a sense. And they just are so much more polished nowadays, like coming out of college. Like, even in NBA players, like a guy like Jason Tatum, he comes out of college and he knows how to give an interview. Zion is so super impressive. Like, when you watch him give an interview, you're like, how the hell is this guy 19 years old? Like, I know what I was doing at 19. Like, there's no way I could give a professional interview on TNT every night. Like, it's just so crazy how much better this generation of superstars and athletes are in the media. And I think that's a large reason why they translate so successfully to those broadcast booths, those studio style shows you were speaking of. And it's just awesome, honestly, to see. And it's great to see them shed light on their personal life when they do like YouTube channels or whatever they want on social media.
Yeah. And even like a guy like Jack Flaherty in St. Louis, who's, you know, spoken up about issues that are a lot bigger than sports. And, you know, as an African-American athlete, as someone in baseball, he's used his voice and his platform to, you know, share his thoughts on things that are more important than, you know, situational pitching with runners on first and third. I think it's great that the leagues also and the players' associations cultivate that within these guys and give them the opportunity to use their platforms in ways outside of, you know, just pitching or dunking or doing whatever they're doing professionally.
No doubt. It's really incredible to see these guys use their platforms to influence such necessary and monumental change, because without them, like, I don't know where we would be. You know, like, these guys have, all across every sports league, white, black, whatever color you are, like, you have the power to influence so much change with your following. If you speak up, if you just use your platform, and all these athletes, it seems like they're using their platforms for good use. You know, they're trying to better society. And I just love seeing that, as you said. Like, it's amazing.
Although I will say, there is something pretty badass about Michael Jordan just faxing a letter that says, "I'm back," when he came back the first time.
Yeah, I mean, definitely would not see that anymore. I guess.
Would it be like an Instagram story?
I think, yeah, maybe like a TikTok, you know, get Addison Rae involved. Who knows?
Casey Alburn is with us. We're hanging out on the show on a Friday. All right, you mentioned the NFL offseason. Especially for your role at Sunday Night Football, how have you seen the NFL become even more than a 12-month-a-year sport, Casey? It's pretty amazing that the league has turned the start of free agency and the draft and OTAs, all of these off-season kind of checkpoints, into their own events. And some of the events are just as big as what happens when we're actually on the field playing.
Yeah. I mean, look, they've taken a page out of the NBA's playbook and have become this full year league. It's no longer just August till February. Now the off season has so much more meaning. The NFL draft is one of my favorite events of the year. And I just think the NFL has just pivoted, and they're starting to adapt with the times and understand that, look, you have all these social media platforms, so why not leverage them to the best use and get all demographics engaged, all people of all ages? They want football content year round, right? Football is still king. And I think it's just been exciting to see the NFL increasingly leverage that in the past few years. I know when I started with Sunday Night Football in 2017, it didn't feel like this, right? Like, it felt like that 6th, 7th month a year league where it took a break for about a month till free agency, and then it picked up for another month with free agency in the draft. And then you kind of didn't hear about football until training camp, right? Late July, August. But now I think that with the players starting to seize their own power and really you're starting to see a power shift from ownership to players where they're starting to empower each other. And I think that's a big reason why we're seeing this 12-month league now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. You just look at the way that you're right, guys take control and take control of not just narrative, but take control of what's actually happening, right? And it's happened in the NBA. It's happened in Major League Baseball to some extent. But the NFL is, I guess, the hallmark league in terms of players being able to grab control of what's going on. Now, it goes both ways because of the way contracts are structured, but I truly believe you're right. There is some control and some aspects of what the players are able to do in terms of their own future that can completely shift the dynamic of things.
Absolutely. And I think that...
But you keep your damn hands off Allen Robinson.
I mean, look, I'm a diehard Jet fan, right? You want to hear a crazy stat? The Jets haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2015. In 2015, they had two, and Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. Before 2015, they didn't have a 1,000-yard receiver since 2008. So they basically...
Wayne Krabet.
2008, I want to say it was Lavernius Coles.
Wow.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'll quickly check on that one as we're talking.
What's that like?
it's
but
just
I can't
like,
say anything. I mean, geez.
So it wasn't even Lavernius Coles. It was – that's pretty astounding. Oh, wow. Excuse me. It wasn't even in 2008. It was in 2007 when it was Jericho Cotchery who had 1,130 yards. I love Jericho Cotchery. But, yeah, the Jets haven't had a playmaker at wide receiver like an Allen Robinson in close to half a decade when they had Marshall and Decker. And before that, yeah, they had guys like Braylon Edwards and Santonio Holmes, but they've never had someone who has had Allen Robinson's body of work. And look, the Jets need – they have a ton of holes on their roster. It's looking like we're about to draft a quarterback at number two. So I think the smart thing to do would be is surround either Justin Fields or Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or whoever it is they take with as many weapons as possible. Continue to beef up that O-line next to Mekhi Becton, who I think is one of the premier left tackles in the NFL, and just do whatever it takes to support this quarterback and do literally the opposite of what they did to support Sam Darnold because they didn't do anything.
You know, as a Bears fan, I just see, and I understand, it seems like most Jets fans are very protective of Sam Darnold. I see as a Bears fan, and Trubisky is a perfect example, how missing on that kind of guy, on that kind of pick, giving up what the Bears gave up. So I can see how Trubisky has set back and will continue to set back the Bears for a number of years. You know, like, you miss on that, the NFL is the hardest league to turn things around. You can't just add a piece or a couple of pieces or get lucky. Like, you can bury yourself for years if you miss on a pick like Mitch Trubisky.
For sure. And that's why I think more and more teams are now willing to cut bait. They're willing to cut the leash and pull the plug earlier on than they would have been in the past, because you can't win without a quarterback in the NFL. So if you draft one and it doesn't work out in the first 2 years, I think teams are more willing to just try again. You have to throw enough shit at the wall and see what sticks, you know?
Now, if you get the right guy, how quickly can things get turned around?
I think if you get the right guy, things could turn around in one NFL season, because once you have that piece, like, that's a missing piece. Everything else, then you just build around. And obviously quarterback is the hardest position to find in all of sports, in my opinion. So the hard work's done. Now it's figuring out how to surround that quarterback with the remaining pieces that fit that puzzle.
All right. You mentioned March Madness and college hoops. I want to wrap up talking about that. You were a Wisconsin guy, a Badgers fan. Outside of the Badgers, give me, and maybe even outside of the Big Ten, give me a couple, or you could stay in the Big Ten, give me a couple of teams, a handful of the teams that you've been most impressed with watching that are the most fun for you to watch this season, Casey?
Oh, it pains me to say this, but I mean, Michigan, they're pretty unreal. I mean, Juwan Howard has done an amazing job with that program in just his second year. And for them to go on a 3-week COVID layoff and come back and beat my Badgers over the weekend was pretty damn impressive and eye-opening, where I wasn't as big of a believer in them before that. And it's just been pretty amazing to see what they've been able to do. And I know that they are just so balanced on both sides of the ball. On offense and defense, they rank like 7th in adjusted offensive efficiency and 7th in adjusted defensive efficiency in the nation. So they're as well-balanced team as it comes in the college basketball world. And I think Juwan Howard has done an amazing job. Like, you look at his career path, he went from Michigan with the Fab Five. He was an all-star in the NBA. And then the end of his career, he was with the Miami Heat. And I think that time with the Heat, he was a role player on the bench. He was a reserve, didn't play much, but he was such an influential figure in that locker room with guys like D Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron. And then he moved to the coaching staff for a few years and he was able to learn on their guys like Eric Spoelstra, David Fizdale. And you could just see how he's been able to apply those lessons learned from his time with the Heat with Michigan, whether it's recruiting, he leverages the guys he was on the Heat roster with through that. And you could just see like his coaching expertise, like he's been great on the sidelines. And I think that's just been pretty awesome to see this year.
Casey Alpern, appreciate it, man. Enjoyed the visit. And like you said, here's to hopefully getting to March Madness, getting through the tournament, getting to really what's always one of the best times in sports is that March Madness, Masters, NFL Draft, NBA, NHL postseasons, baseball starting. We were robbed of all of that last year, so I don't think anyone will take any of that for granted, and hopefully we are still on track here about a month away from all of that goodness starting.
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on. Hopefully we'll talk in a few weeks. We could talk about March Madness, the draft, free agency. We've got a lot of good stuff on the horizon and some better days ahead for the entire nation.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Be well.